CliffCentral.com.
Yebo. All right, listen to me. Eating. Sorry about that. Very rude, very unprofessional. Okay.
What are you eating? Well, now I'm into it. Sorry, now I'm into it. What are you eating?
I'm having a half of a rusk.
That's good.
That's what I've had.
Nothing like a rusk. Yeah. The secret is not to dunk it too long. Mm-mm. You know, there's nothing worse. The most heartbreaking moment in the world.
When it falls apart. When
you dunk it too long. Mm-mm. Well, yeah, and it falls in the tea and you just think to yourself, is this what my life's become?
No.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
So I never do rusks in coffee. I only ever do them in tea.
Yes.
And you have
tea.
You'd rather time it so that the rusk isn't as soft, but it comes out whole. Because there's nothing worse than
It's still got some crunch.
If you have like bits of rusk in the tea, you have to throw the tea out.
Oh.
Or you can just like take your spoon and just scoop.
No.
Chuck the whole thing.
Those are
I'm
rules.
With you, Gareth. You've got to. It's a science, that thing.
Yep.
Very so nice. you've never eaten the mush at the bottom?
Hell no. That stuff is for it's for throwing away.
No, man, that was part of the fun. Well, as a kid, as an adult.
Lebang, weren't you meant to start putting up your Christmas decorations already? What's the story there?
Hey.
Have you done it?
Come on.
Have you started?
What's with this pressure? Oh, no, of course not. So we did it at my mom's place. Because, like, sure, we're going to do it when we go to Mpumalanga as well.
Okay.
But we're not going to do it here. Nah. That's what the shops are for. That's what the malls are for. They'll see all the Christmas trees they want. I'm cool. But the kids, they did do it 2 weeks ago at my mom's place. So they had their fun and all that jazz.
Jean says, dipping a rusk in a cup of tea. You see, we've started a thing now. This is always what happens on the show. It's some throwaway thing, some sideline comment that none of us are really that into. We weren't prepared to talk about it, and it becomes the main topic of conversation. So Jean says, dipping a rusk, it takes years of practice. And then there are more. I say, throw in more rusks, says Cabello. Kanda says, when the rusk breaks, it's like the end of Titanic when Jack drowns.
That's a good analogy.
So according to Chris, this is an interesting thing that South African, maybe this is the only thing that makes us all one nation, because we're always looking for that one thing that makes South Africa a unified place, right? We are a nation that enjoys rusks. It's not a thing anywhere else, apparently. Most expats miss the rusks the most. And black, white, Indian, everybody loves a rusk in their tea, right? It's a thing. It's a South African thing.
Absolutely.
We can thank Omar rusks for that. Oh, yes, exactly. Those are the only ones I like. I don't like these ones with the raisins and the bran.
Raisins and nuts.
That's bullshit.
What are you doing? And I always see them at the office, whether it's like between you and Rena, Gareth, there's always those rusks that just have too much going on.
No, those are not my favorite ones, right?
Come on, simple. No. Yeah. Buttermilk.
Both of you are crazy. There's only one world champion of rusks. Got to get yourself to Woolworths. There's the oatmeal ones. Oh, are you joking? World champion.
Okay.
Incredible. Unplayable.
But are you telling me, Chris, that there are no other countries where they like rusks?
It's not a thing globally.
Really?
Like, rusks are not a thing. Yeah. I mean, that I would say from my tiny experience of the world. We are in love with rusks.
Tato's obviously got lots of money, because Tato says, life hack, make two cups of tea. Obviously, one is for the rusk, the other one is to drink. Sure. Yeah, but that's a lot of tea and milk and sugar and yeah, I don't know if we can all afford that, Tato. I mean, you know, times are tough.
but I'm with Tato. So when I make my dipping cup of tea, right, that's not – I don't do the drinking. Like, if I'm full on rusks now, so I'm like – 4 or 5 rusks in, that tea's gone. I'm not like, oh, I'm gonna sip the rest. So I know what he's saying is make another one to enjoy to drink.
You
have 4 or 5 at a time, bro.
No, but let's be fair.
I get a bit crazy.
That's a lot. You shouldn't be having that much. I mean, especially
in one sitting.
I know that you. I mean, you're in a position you can criticize the rest of us because you're not fat and you really do exercise off all those extra calories. I know you do. So, You can eat whatever you want, but I think it's a little bit greedy to have more than one rusk.
Well, I'll go two six.
Two is the cap. Really? Two, and you know you're pushing it.
I think we've discovered a weakness here.
Crazy.
Bulela will go for six sometimes at a time. Sure.
Listen, if I'm feeling it, those rusks, I can't stop. It's like blue Doritos. Once I open blue Doritos, forget it. Forget the whole big bag, maybe even a second one.
Okay.
Goes. I can't stop myself.
We all have our weaknesses. I'm so pleased you're also human.
All of our vices.
For you, it's blue Doritos and rusks. I like chips. Hey, it's the one thing I can't. I always keep packets of chips in the house, and there are those days where you just go, I need that. I don't care. Grab yourself one of those big packets, and you just demolish it all on your own. That's a good thing. I'm not into chocolate. I'm not much into sweets. It's not really something that I think about often. But chips, yo. That's also a very South African thing. It's like salt and vinegar chips and barbecue chips and smoked beef chips. And, that's very South African stuff. They don't really do that in other countries as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
no. The Americans do have. I don't know when the last time you were there is. When they say big packet of chips in America, one thing I remember about them, they mean big packet of chips. Like we're playing around with that little 150 gram. It's crazy. You got to. It's like having a small child with you taking it back to the car.
That's too much.
You know when you watch these shows on like DSTV, those like TLC shows where like they bring you into the lives of overweight families and how much they really, really eat. It'll actually scare you.
Yeah.
There was this one family in particular that was like, okay, cool, let's all go get lunch. So like three of them get sent to the pizza store. They're like, okay, can we get 10 boxes of these flavors? By the time they got home, there were only seven boxes left. So in between ordering at the store and driving home, three boxes of pizza, guys, look at them. I'm telling you, three boxes of pizza got consumed in the vehicle.
That's crazy.
I'm trying to find it, but I saw this thing. Let me just see if I can't get it for you and put it on screen because it's worth seeing. There are.
While you do that,
sorry,
Gareth.
One
thing I have to, dear Americans, stop saying, we have something like that here. It's called jerky. No, you don't have something like biltong here.
That's not the same.
Don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that. Because now you make yourself look bad, and now you make me look bad, because now I have to tell you that it's not the same, and now it's an ugly situation. No, jerky is not the same as biltong.
Yeah, it's not biltong. I'm sorry. I will not tolerate any opposition to this. You're right, Mbulelo, and let's not confuse the two. Beef jerky is gross.
Yeah.
Biltong is fantastic.
It is.
And we're the only people in the world who can make proper biltong. Sorry. Again, I'm not going to apologize for the other people and their attempts, but South Africa is the only place that does it properly. So here's the picture. Have a look at this. Those three women at the top there. It says, our council house had no heating for 8 years. It's covered in mold, blah, blah, blah. It's this mother and her two fat daughters. All right. How do you like them?
That's all. What is the reason?
Big, fat, ugly women. And
there's a comment.
Then later on it says, maybe if the fridge door stayed closed for more than 5 minutes, it wouldn't be so cold.
That's cold. That is cold.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, they are.
I think that's hilarious.
Right.
So, but you know, there is this problem, like all these people all over the world who are, They go and moan to newspapers like, I think that's the Daily Sun. Let me just see. Yeah, the Sun, which is the worst paper in Britain. But you know, these journalists, in inverted commas, they will go around and they'll actively ask people like that, what's wrong with your life? How could your life be better? But it's never about them or what they're doing to make their life better. It's always about someone else who's to blame for how fat they are, how poor they are, how their house doesn't have heating, how there's mold on the walls. Never their fault. Like, I'm pretty much guaranteed exactly the reaction I'm looking for from Bulelo and Lebang on this. But if you had moldy walls in your house, guess what? You'd have to paint them and you'd have to get someone in to check where the leak is. It would be up to you, up to me. No one else is going to do that for us. You think the ANC is going to send someone around to come and check on mold? or even the DA, mayor of Johannesburg, the new one, poor. You think she's going to send someone around to your house to check on the mold? Hell no.
No way.
You're going to sort that out.
It's on you, honey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So these people live in society that's become so soft that they're not responsible for anything that happens to them. It's always somebody else's problem. It's always someone else's fault, and it's always someone else going to solve it for you. And I just, that's yep. That is going to be the demise ultimately of the Western world. I mean, we have a full go at China on this show, and they deserve it. But if you really want to see pathetic, go to the Western world where all these coddled people, these pathetic, soft people, are waiting for someone else to take responsibility for them every step of the way. It's ridiculous. Wet rusks were the first thing our mothers put in our mouths. You all have baby mouth fetish. Thanks very much, Michael. But that maybe that's true. Yeah. Theron says, geez, wheeze, Mbulelo. Who would have thought that rusks and Doritos was your kryptonite? Yeah.
You have no idea. Yeah. You have no idea.
Well, it's not just you. Tavisa says, I finished a full bag of blue Doritos while working yesterday. Too addictive. Yeah.
There's crack in there. I've always believed that the blue Doritos, there's crack in there.
It's a wild flavor. It's a wild flavor, wasn't it?
People agreeing with you about jerky not being biltong. All Simbas suck because they don't have tazos. Remember those?
What a throwback.
Yo, how old are we?
What a throwback. Oh, there's so many young kids who don't know what's going on there.
The 2000s are like, what are those?
It costs more to buy vegetables and fruit in the US than it does to buy fast food. They have it backwards over there. Well, it's also true here, hey? I mean, like, fast food is pretty cheap compared to buying stuff that's healthy for you. I don't know. I just think it's so easy to just grab the fast food or the packet of chips or whatever and satiate your hunger. It's much harder to make a salad. It's not on someone's, you know, list of priorities. I'm really hungry. Let's make a salad. It's way more difficult.
As with anything, the good stuff just takes longer to do. I don't think it's purely food. If you want it done properly, it's generally murder. If you take shortcuts, it'll get you. It will get you.
Well, MSG is the crack in chips. That's true. Monosodium glutamate. Yeah. That's the stuff.
That's what
we love. We can't get enough of that. And it's Chinese crack for everybody, according to Michael. Once you take the time, electricity cook a whole meal much easier. Once you take the time, electricity cook a whole meal much easier. I don't know what you mean. But apparently the thing that everybody should have in their kitchen, and I gave one to my brother and sister-in-law for Christmas last year, and I didn't buy one for myself, and maybe I should have. It's one of those air fryers. Apparently those things
I was going to say, don't say air fryer.
Those things are those the winner? Because that's what people tell me. They say that is what you should have. No?
Yeah, look, my mom had one like in the 90s. And from my memory, like things just happened like this.
Really?
Like, full chickens, boom, 20 minutes. Like I just remember always eating like crispy chicken. And it came out of this huge round thing with this lid that had almost like a machine on top of it. I didn't know what it was. But apparently it's back in fashion. And if you just want to get food quick, that's it.
That's the thing. That's the thing I need then. That's what I'm missing out on.
Yes, sir.
Bulelo, you seem to be anti the air fryer. Do you want to explain your position?
No, because I've got a dickhead in my life who thinks she must tell me to get an air fryer. Like I barely cook anyway. And now she's got it and sends me all her food that she made with her air fryer. So you've just hit a nerve. That's all that's happened there. Sorry. I've got someone who's very close to me who's I think she's obviously getting a cut for every air fryer sold in South Africa.
Okay, but then your subjective opinion's been poisoned by this person. It doesn't mean the air fryer is the problem. She might be the problem. No?
Well, she epitomizes a certain sector of society as well,
You and your prejudices.
I've been told that I hate this particular sector of society by Ben Karpinski, so I don't want to really get into it.
Yeah. You know?
So.
Yeah, look, a lot of people in the comments are backing the air fryer. I think maybe it's a real thing.
Like the air fryer.
I want one, dude. I want one. I'm keen. I think I must get one for Christmas.
But do you cook enough?
Do you cook? I do. I probably cook twice a week. The rest of the time, I make really simple. By cook, I mean like switch on stoves and ovens and things. it's no fun to cook for yourself. If it's just you, you're not impressing anybody. It's not a thing. I mean, last week.
I know what you mean.
Was it Wednesday or Thursday? I cooked a really nice steak and I felt good about that. And it was nice. But then you also have to clean up the mess afterwards, which I hate. So I do that. I make nice salads. I can do basic stuff. I mean, I'm not a complete moron in the kitchen, but if an air fryer makes it cleaner and simpler, I'm all for it, man. I'll do that. Air fryer is fine, says Winsterian Pikachu. It's basically a small oven that heats up quicker. Nothing special. I used mine again yesterday. Okay. Anna Marie Nell says it must be his sister, as in the air fryer. Hang on. Who are we talking about?
No, Mbulelo.
Oh, no, sorry. Mbulelo.
No. My sister wouldn't know.
Luzanne says, I just bought an air fryer on Cyber Monday yesterday. Oh, yeah. Yesterday was Cyber Monday. Ah, oh, shit. I missed out on some savings. Ka-ching, ka-ching. Damn it. Cooking is the devil's work, says Dawn. Yeah, I'm with you.
I agree.
That's horrible.
I'm with Dawn. I agree.
It's a boring thing to do.
So what must happen?
I also don't change my meals that much. So I'm just like, I eat chicken basically all week and a steak or something on the weekend.
Mm.
So I'll have two chickens a week. Just go to Woolworths. Give me that.
Why don't you just do like meal plans? Like, you seem like the meal plan kind of guy. Like, just pack your lunch boxes for like the whole week and just warm that shit up as you go.
No, because I like fresh food as well. Like, if I have my chicken with my veg, I like to go and buy the fresh. So I don't have like a packed fridge at home.
Otherwise, the veggies go
off. So I like a chicken. I chop it up. It's ready to go wherever I'm going. It takes me about 2 days to eat a whole chicken. And then I have that with fresh veggies all the time.
I'm discovering all these things about you. This is so exciting. Well, Rusks, Doritos, full chickens.
I know. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
That's why the sun is out.
How long does it take you to demolish a full chicken? Do you do that in one sitting or do you do it over 2 days?
No. Quarter. Well, I eat a quarter. So I'll have like a quarter for lunch, quarter for supper, and then rinse and repeat on the next day. So I go through about three or four chickens a week, maybe two or three. Four chickens a week. Yeah. Hey, listen, exercise doesn't come for free, you know? You got to guzzle.
Somebody told me over the weekend, and I have every reason to believe this is true, that the only surefire way to prolong your life and to give yourself as much longevity as possible is to have a calorie-controlled diet. Across all species, no matter where you're from, what you eat, what your level of income is, a calorie-controlled diet is the only way to ensure that you have a long life. Now, I think that's probably true. I mean, why wouldn't it be?
No.
What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, I'd probably have to ask more questions because calories come in a spectrum as well. There's different qualities of calories, right? We know now there's empty calories. There's complex even within our carbohydrates, you want to be chasing those complex carbs. So I think it's trickier slightly than, oh, I'm just eating calories. This is why calorie counting is dangerous. Is that what's the complexity of the food you're consuming on a chemical levels and a really important question to ask yourself, not just calorie count. Otherwise, you could just have donuts.
Well, seems like a legit start to me. At least it's something we can all do, you know. Just limit the amount of goddamn food.
I'm sure if you ask the person. It sounds like if you ask them, they'd break it down.
Ruth.
Yeah, like wouldn't the key just be finding a balance? Sorry.
Yeah,
like,
I'm with you. And you know what?
Yeah,
everybody's different. So there's no one size fits all diet. Just like there isn't a one size fits all cupboard.
Jockstrap.
Ruth says. By the way, Gareth, happy Hanukkah to all your Jewish listeners. Yes, indeed, it is time to light up that menorah. That's what we're doing. It's what the Jewish people are doing right now. So there was Thanksgiving, then there's Hanukkah, then there's Christmas, then there's New Year. So there's some useful stuff to remember. All right. I'm with Mbulelo, says Inga. One is not enough. Rusks are a breakfast on occasion. Yeah, I mean, listen, it does substitute for breakfast. And it's the easiest breakfast you can have, right? You just dip that thing in the tea and you're sorted. Katu Kat
says... I'm talking about dessert, yeah. Look.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about a meal. Okay, so six rusks is like after my meal for me.
Katu Kat says the other thing we need is more fiber. None of us is eating enough fiber. Yes, because fiber is good for your digestion. And you will have very successful stools if you have a lot of fiber in your diet. That's correct.
Yeah, them all bran flakes are dangerous, man. If you want to visit the toilet every other... You've got to balance that out.
Can I be revolting for 5 seconds? I was so farty yesterday. I don't know what the hell I'd eaten or what was going on, but the whole goddamn day I sounded like a... thank God it ended somewhere around 8 o'clock last night. But I was like the whole day,
like a marching band.
Like a marching band. I don't know what it was. It's very important that we share this stuff. I thought I'd let you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Listen, there's an argument going on in the comments here. Between Onko Botse and Annette, because Annette says she has salmon once a week. Now, that is an expensive business.
Ooh. Wow. That's wish. That's my treat. Like once a month, I go and have, there's a restaurant once, I'll sit there, give me the Norwegian stuff. They know. The one guy knows me now. When he sees me, he knows why I'm there. Once a month. Once a week.
Salmon is expensive. Yes. My God. That's one that you know what? Like normally I'll go into the shop and I'm not really too bothered by, you know, because it's only for one. So I can normally, you'd afford to buy enough for one. If you're buying for kids and for, you know, other people who you're catering for, you're having a dinner party, whatever, that gets expensive. But if it's just you, you can afford a portion of pretty much anything. The salmon is the one thing I look at and go, nah, I think I'll wait.
Yeah. the only time I get salmon is when somebody's treating me to lunch. Like I don't even think twice. I already know it's my opportunity. Like my best friend even knows by now. Like if she's taking me out, she knows I'm gonna get the salmon, because
I had other things. I had other things on the agenda, and we've spent a good half an hour now talking about it's all because of the rusks, right? I shouldn't have eaten that goddamn rusk. It's completely changed. So okay.
This is what happened.
Apparently, according to lovely Lady Lee, beans and meat makes you farty. Okay.
Beans.
Therence says, guys, are we hungry this morning? All this talk of food. Yeah, I'm afraid. That's what's going on. As long as you didn't touch cloth, says Steve E. No, there were no accidents. Thank God.
As long as you didn't follow through.
Yeah, thank God. Wow.
Hey, that we don't know.
I would tell you that would be a story at least. But luckily I didn't have to really leave the house yesterday at all. So nobody else had to be exposed to the fartiness, but it was a big thing yesterday, trust me. Horrible. God, it was horrible. I was actually disgusted
in
myself.
Who was the salmon lady just now?
I was disgusted in myself. I was walking around the house going, again? Like really? This is the revolt. What's going on in you? Like, what's happening in there? Very upsetting. Onions also, according to Winsterian Pikachu, onions also make you fart. Okay, well, there we go.
Now we've got, like, you can't escape onions. Onions are like we put them in everything to start. We got to fart because onions literally go in.
Well, thank God it's one of the, it was a big day, so I remember it. But normally, most days it's much more subtle and controlled. But yesterday, it was honestly, it was really, really something else. I thought, how is it possible?
It's like a Ford Cortina, huh?
I had a windstorm going on. I love this. Lenise says you had a windstorm going on. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Chicken makes your breath and sweat smell like shit, says Hein. I don't know if that's true. Does chicken make you smell?
I don't know.
And like your sweat already smells, surely.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. Michael says, I had a similar day to you yesterday, Gareth. It must be the new variant. Yes. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Bihleng says, I just arrived at work and it's empty. I just ran back as I got to my office door until I got to the gate and security said all is well. Well, yeah, it's kind of scary if you get to the office and no one is there, you know? Carl says, after a steak and onion rings, my duvet actually hovers. Ah, that's so great. All right, very good. According to Cabello, not chicken, but acha and garlic makes you smelly.
Oh, yeah. Acha.
Acha's a tough one. Eh?
And garlic, I mean, you sweat that stuff. You know what the other thing is that you sweat if you drink it? Now, thank God I don't drink the stuff, but I remember I had it once. You know that horrible caramel vodka shit that they sell? It's like a...
Does it sweat out of you?
No, it's caramel vodka, and people drink it like a shooter, I suppose. But you wake up for like 2 days after that. Your skin actually smells of caramel vodka. It's not a great smell. It's not the worst. It's not like garlic, but it's not a... you don't feel very clean. I don't know where it goes, but it comes straight out of your pores, as far as I can tell. That's not so good.
Doesn't sound good.
Hey, listen, we've got
also, but caramel vodka.
Yeah, I know, it's gross. No, it's gross. We've got to think about these things because we're going to be spending a lot of time eating over the next month, and we're going to spend a lot of time around other people in the next month. So we have to try and make sure that we eat the stuff that's good for us, that we don't smell, and that we don't get too farty, right? Very important.
Yeah, yes, that's the Christmas message.
On that note, Annette says asparagus pea. Yeah, that's another bad one, you know?
And asparagus is so good, right?
I know.
But do you also don't think of the aftermath.
Do you also have asparagus as part of like the Christmas fanfare? Like there's always some asparagus.
Not even Christmas.
Well.
I just always have asparagus in the house. Like always. I love it. Asparagus, just wrap it in bacon, throw it in the oven for like 10 minutes.
Listen to you.
To say Parmesan.
You're like
Parmesan cheese.
You're like Gordon Ramsay, you.
Hey, man. Somebody rum. Has to feed these kids well.
Rum is also, that's true. Corona's Boring says rum is the stinky sweat juice. Yes, rum is rum.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That I remember. Mm. That one, yeah. Tipo Tinto. Mm. The memories of Tipo Tinto of sweating that out.
You drink that stuff, you're going to smell funny the next day.
Dude.
Listen to this. This is interesting. You know your stuff. Okay, so this is all about like having a kosher kitchen, because you know if you're Jewish and frum, you have to have a kosher kitchen. So you have two kitchens. You have the one that deals with the stuff that is kosher, and the other one that deals with stuff that isn't. And you don't never shall the two mix. You don't mix your cutlery either, from the one to the other.
Oh
no! It's some serious rules.
To tell you a quick story, I went to a friend's house. I just happened to be there. There's a whole situation now. Now I'm picking my plate up to go and put it in the dishwasher or whatever. Mm-hmm. And do I not put it in the wrong part of the kitchen? Mm-hmm. But now that part of the kitchen is reserved for a brother who hasn't been home and lives in Israel for 6 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And my friend really hates that his mom looks after the house like that. He's like he's a full-on scientist. So anyway, I made that mistake. Now it's a whole thing, and I'm staying at the guy's place now, and the mom's like super hypochondriac, and I've put a non-kosher plate in the kosher dishwasher, and it was, a situation.
Was it? Messy.
Yeah. No, she's like anxiety-laden lady, and now I've ruined a part of the kitchen that she hasn't used for 6 years with one plate.
Sounds ridiculous. Yeah. All right, Bulelo, we're going to let you go, and Lebang and I are going to get stuck into This Is Us for this morning, and at 7:30 a.m. on a Tuesday, and every week on Lebang's own show, Life with Lebang, which is at 9 o'clock on a Thursday, you get to be a part of this conversation, and it's something that we are trying to do to make a positive change and bring some really interesting positive moves into what it is to be South African. It all came about because of what happened in June and July with those riots, and people were very down. There were lots of people asking, well, what does it mean to be South African? What are we? We're like, let's face ourselves head on. Let's look at ourselves in the mirror and see what we can do to get a grip on what it is to be South African. And we've decided to look for some solutions. And we'll answer the question about what makes South Africa a better place. That's kind of what we do with This Is Us. So you want to introduce our guest for the morning?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, I mean, obviously you said every single week we obviously chat to some of these great people that share really more about their lives, because they've obviously stripped themselves and really are just giving a service and giving back to the community all the time. So today we're going to be chatting to Leslie Ann Van Salmon. She's the managing director at Kulisa Social Solutions, and they're a multi-award winning NPO. I mean, they've been around since like 1997, and they aim to empower vulnerable children, the youth, people who've been marginalized, and basically like the community at large to try and unlock their full potential, just, you know, to develop resilient pathways and to give people the skills that lead to a sustainable future. So they do a lot of things. And the work that Leslie Ann has done is, it's crazy. Like to date, they've got like over 180 staff through 16 offices. They're working through maybe like 150 communities. It's a lot of work. And I'm really excited. So Leanne's going to join us today. Leslie Ann is going to tell us more about her work and also like how she's really just like stripped herself of herself and given back. So Leslie, thank you so much for being here and welcome to This Is Us.
Hey, nice to
thank
see you.
Thank you. And it's such a privilege to be with you all. Hi. Hi, Gareth.
Good. Nice to see you, Leslie. So, I mean, did Lebung get it right there?
Thank
because
you.
Because sometimes in these introductions, you know, like we are told what your job title is and we get like a corporate kind of summary of what it is you do. But how did you get into this?
Well, 24 years ago, by default, I walked into a prison to render a storytelling program to introduce African stories to young black people who had never really had a chance to understand their culture. And I fell in love with these young people because I got to realize that they had never really had a chance to identify with their past and to actually tell their own stories. When I listened to the stories of these young people, I developed a philosophy that I live to according to this day is don't ask somebody what they did, but what happened to them. And when we start asking people what happened to them, it starts giving us huge significant insights into why young people are committing crime, why we have so many young children who are so lost, why we have so many families that are so dysfunctional. And we in this country have got to start listening to each other and understanding our stories in order for every one of us to be able to contribute towards what's caused the dysfunctionality in the lives of these people.
Mm. Now, Leslie, and I know that you guys started your project with mainly like inmates and mainly with, you know, getting inmates back into society, but it's really evolved over the years. Can you tell us a bit more about the community of opportunity approach? Because I think that is so cool.
Oh, you've really done your homework. So after working with offenders for many, many years, we realized that dealing with offending behavior was not really getting to the causal factors of why young people were actually committing crime. Yes, we were helping to reintegrate them. We're helping to reunite them with their families and very much enabling them to take responsibility for the wrong that they had done, because restorative justice is a crucial part of our work is taking accountability. But when we started looking at what really we need to do to address, you know, multiple social challenges, we flipped the pyramid upside down and we started saying, we can't do anything without asking the community, what are your solutions to your problems? What are your problems? And where are the assets in your communities that we can develop and tap into to enable them to realize their full potential? Because far too often we make assumptions about what communities need. You know, we have, you know, corporates, governments building hospitals, building schools and parks and all sorts of things, only to find that the minute there's any unrest, these assets are totally demolished because the communities are angry and they don't want these things to be built. They want to be heard. So when we started working in a systemic way and looking at never doing anything without asking the community what their solutions are, the community came up with so many ideas for dealing with social ills and dealing with exclusion. And these are methodologies and processes that we as individuals or external stakeholders would never ourselves have identified. And in the past 3 or nearly 4 years now, we listened to the voices of over 4,000 community members, ranging from persons with albinism, from the elderly, from people in deep rural areas, from victims of xenophobia. And we asked them, what would it look like if you were living your best life? And what has amazed us is we would think it would be the most sophisticated type of infrastructure. But the fundamentals that these people have told us is that we want a roof over our classroom. We want a teacher who's not suicidal. We want school books. We want access to IT. We want families that don't beat each other up. We want a roof over our heads. We want to be able to walk to school safely. And when we look systemically at what the solutions that the communities themselves have given us, as we start saying, wow, all these billions and billions and billions of rands, why haven't they gone towards these basic fundamental human needs, these the basic hierarchical needs of the people in our country? And that's really what Kulisa's work focuses on now is we work in geographic ecosystems. So working in one school alone doing STEM subjects or playing soccer doesn't deal with the systemic needs of the children. So what we do is we look at, after consulting the community, look at a multifaceted approach that provides an opportunity for everybody within that system to benefit. And then we bring in different partners, different stakeholders, because for us, collaboration with NGOs, governments at a local level is absolutely pivotal to our work. Nobody can do anything on their own. And we now have an algorithm where we can actually measure social impact. So by bringing in different stakeholders, we've got the baseline data by conducting the research through the storytelling, through the transit walkthrough, engaging with the stakeholders. We've got that baseline data. And we then start saying to different parties, listen, instead of this NGOs working in silos, why don't we look at where the alignment lies? Let's not be jealous of what you've got, because if we can do things together, we can achieve so much more and we can liberate so many more opportunities. And then we start looking at corporates and how the corporates can align what they're doing within this ecosystem and looking at how we can match strategy with needs and then start looking at alignment of different community priorities. And then once you start bringing in the corporate volunteer or the individual volunteer aspect, that's really where the cherry on the top comes, because there's nobody in South Africa, nobody who cannot play their role in making South Africa a much better place. But the secret here lies in being able to match passion with purpose, because we have got needs. We can show you the community in this area need sewing. The Gorgos want to sew. We really need a soccer ball. We would really love somebody to do virtual training. So by having these realistically and carefully articulated needs, there's a massive opportunity for people to come in a way that's measurable and in a way that we can show a return on investment.
That was a lot.
This is interesting work, and I'm sure that you have insights into this that the rest of us don't have. And I'd love to hear what you have to say, Leslie, when it comes to you particularly with prisoners, you know, the fact that that's where it all started for you in telling these stories. I mean, how many of these young people in prison in South Africa are there for petty crimes and for things that really shouldn't be on their record forever? You know, it could be dealing in drugs or, you know, some petty theft. And by no means am I making excuses for any of these criminals, because I know our audience will say to me, don't go and start trying to absolve them of what they've done and what they've been up to. But you ask the question, what happened to you, as opposed to what did you do? And I like that, although it seems to eschew some of the personal responsibility. So you're walking a bit of a fine line here, because you do want a lot of these people to develop a sense of personal responsibility. Perhaps the fact that there wasn't personal responsibility in their family or home life or even in their community at large is part of the reason that they end up in these very tricky situations. How do you walk that line?
Okay, so when we say what happened to you, what happened in your life that led you to make a decision to commit a crime? So it could be that, at school there's no recreation. I joined a group of gangsters as friends, because that's where I found the love and the solace. Mm-hmm. And we became involved in petty crimes, and eventually to develop our bravado and to show that we're valuable, we escalated to commit more and more serious crimes. So what was the catalyst? And so that's really where we're saying what happened. I'm not for 1 minute saying that we must absolve people for wrongdoing. Everything that we do is you have to take responsibility. But if we can start looking at what's happening around us in our society today with our young children today, we can start seeing the total lack of, you know, families being taught how to bring their children up properly, how to really provide the necessary anchor of love and support. Because in all the research we're doing, the families themselves come from the brokenness. And we look at the history of our country, that is really, you know, going back, is the little support that the families have really had in learning how to develop young people, because they're living in such poverty to a very large extent, and because they themselves don't even know how to love and protect themselves. So again, you know, the offending behavior, nobody can excuse it. But if we can start creating alternatives at a young age for children to become actively engaged in healthy outdoor activities and to be informed of alternatives in life and to develop their emotional intelligence, which is so, so, so vital. And that's where we see with the thousands right. of young people we are working with where the gap is.
Yeah, this is tricky. I mean, there's so much stuff here that we can do as individuals and we can do in NGOs and the kind of work that you're doing. But there is also some stuff that really does fall squarely on the table of government. And we know unemployment is a huge problem. And for so many of these young men, I don't think it's controversial to say that if they had a job, if they had some reason to wake up in the morning and something constructive to do, whether it was for money or for personal feelings of achievement, you know, some sort of ability to make a contribution to the world, we would probably have a lot less of the social ills that come from them not having that. Is that your experience too, or am I grasping a little bit here?
Absolutely. No. That you are 100% correct. And it's interesting, we had a dialogue circle with me and Alex, in fact, immediately the week after the looting happened. And we engaged with 14 different groups through different forms of dialogue, trying to make sense of what had happened. And we got the looters, the shop owners, the victims, the people who had lost family members, into a dialogue saying, what went wrong? Why did we go on this rampant type of behavior? And it was the first time that people and Alex, and it sounds incredible, but it's true, had actually sat down and got to know each other, even though they live rubbing shoulders, that they actually, as human beings, sat down and spoke to each other. And from those dialogues, even the individuals in that devastated community started reaching out to each other to say, okay, you know, you lost your job, or if you're going to look for a job, let me take care of your child for you during the day. She can come and play with my children, and I'll look out for you, or I'll look out for your house. So even people at a grassroots level, given the chance to realize the value that they can add to each other's lives by connecting as human beings, can make such a huge difference. And Gareth, just on that one note, is we had a very well-known individual who came to one of the groups, and it was a really, really sad day when everybody was just totally helpless. Mm. And the one person turned around afterwards and said to me, you know, Liz, I can't remember what you said. I can't remember what I said, but I'll never forget how I feel today. Mm-hmm. I feel that I'm a human being because I've been listened to.
Yeah, that's quite a thing.
And you know, we downplay, I guess, the necessity of really just those simple things, being able to have a conversation with your neighbors and the people in your community, just being able to share your struggles, because you'll realize that for the most part, we maybe all have similar struggles. And if anything, the solution could be right next door. And I just want to find out, like, Lizzie, what are some of the real practical ways that, for example, we can apply ourselves to some of these causes? Because I believe that at the end of the day, we all do want to see a better South Africa. Mm. But at the same time, realistically, we're all kind of busy going about our lives, you know, just trying to survive. And it's also important for us to feel that need of helping, and that feeling of, you know, you're also giving back. So how can we practically get involved with some of these causes, just so we can also do our bit in helping out?
So there's a platform called For Good. That is has been a source of literally hundreds and hundreds of individuals and corporates, where NGOs post their cause, and they could be asking for old paintbrushes, they could be asking for training or board members, a whole variety. So For Good is an amazing platform. And then on Kulisa's website, for example, we also have our own wish list. And even in the busyness, if you've got a garage and you're wanting to chuck out old tins of paint or whatever, these types of things, it even can lift up a classroom. So I would really say is go to a good platform. And we've also got a form on our website where individuals who would like to donate or would love to just align their passion with a purpose is go onto our website and say, listen, I've got old headdresses I want to donate, or I've got an hour of my time, I'd like to do some online motivational talking. And because Kulisa is a large NGO, we are able to match people throughout the country with purposes. And again, nothing is done without having knowing there's a need. I'm not going to waste Gareth's time to donate or auction off his ties if I don't know there's a need that's linked to Gareth's passion, which is social justice.
So
again, it's that need tables.
What I love about this and what makes this slightly different to anyone who run an NGO, you know, they're always asking for money. And we're living in a country now where people just don't have a whole lot of money, and we have so many worthy causes that it's exhausting for ordinary people who are constantly feeling prevailed upon by these NGOs. Oh, you've got to donate money. You've got to donate money. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. You're helping when actually you may yourself be in some financial trouble, but you feel compelled to help nonetheless. What you're asking for here, and what I love, is you can donate old paintbrushes. You can donate old clothes. You can donate your time. You can give your expertise, you can mentor somebody, you can spend 20 minutes on a, you know, Saturday morning doing something really useful. And that's special, because everybody has something that they have too much of, or something that they have extra to give. And I think that that's really, really special. I think that that gives everybody an opportunity to be a part of something.
Absolutely. And Gareth, when a gratification, I mean, when the donation or of time or whatever is matched with our proof to you of where your donation of your ties went, I mean, actually show you these young graduates wearing your ties, because we don't do anything without giving feedback. Every single person who gives to us, we say, this is where it's gone. Here's the pictures. And we provide you with feedback on an ongoing basis to say, look at the difference you made. That knowing that what you've done has not just been a drop off or a meaningless donation or just 20 minutes of your time, you know, oh, great, I did it. But when you know that it's really, really massive, it's made a difference, that for us is the most important thing.
Yeah, I love it.
That's a measurable return on your investment, however small it may be.
Yeah, that's terrific. It really is. And again, it's something anyone can do. You don't have to have tons of money. You don't have to have a garage full of stuff. You might just have a little bag of extra things lying around the house that will allow someone to perfect a skill or a craft. It will teach someone, give them the materials to be able to do something that they already have the creative instinct to do. I think that's lovely.
It is. It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. That's cool. Leslie, before you go and before you leave us, like, where do you guys ultimately see yourselves working, and what kind of areas, I think, like within the next, I guess, 8 to 10 years, because obviously all the work that we're doing now isn't really for us, right? It's for the kids, and it's for the future to really, get the rewards. So what kind of growth do you see Kulisa heading into? Because I know now you guys have gone from working in these little communities to working in more and more and more little communities. So I guess from like a growth perspective, where's Kulisa going?
Kulisa is going to take those grassroots fledgling NGOs that are so passionate to make a difference, who use their pension money, who sell whatever they've got just to eke a living, to have connectivity to support the NGOs. The amount of NGOs in this country who will never be funded because they don't have the governance training, they will never be able to access funding because it's so difficult these days. Our passion is going to take those grassroots NGOs that are making such a difference with nothing, to elevate them to the level where they can access funding, where they can be profiled. And we want to take, you know, hopefully thousands and thousands of NGOs and escalate them to the level where they too can be proud and stand up and say, we've got funding, we've got a track record. Because the, you know, government, as we said, these days, relying on government alone to do what needs to be done on the ground. The NGOs are doing that. And the amount of NGOs who are doing it because there's nobody else to do it, the poverty, the hunger, the children going without clothing, the ECD, we need to uplift these NGOs, and that's Khaleesi's passion. And if anybody can help in terms of that, that is where we need to focus on creating an army of powerful, effective NGOs in our country.
Well, listen, congratulations.
That is wild.
I mean, congrats on what you're doing. I think that the way it all started, your story about the prisoners, is what's grabbed my attention here, because we just throw these people into our awful, awful jails. And listen, if you want to see what really miserable circumstances look like, just go and visit a South African jail. You will suddenly have so much more appreciation for those little things that you take for granted. And the fact that it all started there for you, and we shouldn't just cast these people into jail and forget about them. We're asking for trouble. We're asking for a massive return on investment that's going to be very, very negative for us if we just throw them in and throw away the key. We need to look after ourselves. We need to look after other people and lift the whole community up. And it's going to take a combined effort. And you've started that. So well done to you, Leslie. And it's great to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody in South Africa who's going to think about what they can throw away and throw up.
Well, especially at this time of year, right? I mean, you can spring clean your house during the holidays, see what you don't need anymore. We've all got something that we've got too much of. And we can probably find a way to put that to good use. So get hold of Khaleesi and see what you can do with them.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I wish you a happy festive season. Thank you.
Leslie Ann Van Selm. And that's from Khaleesi. That's where Leslie Ann is. Very good to have you here. Lebang, we will return with This Is Us next week, same time, same place, and on your show on Thursday.
Yep. Yes, every single Thursday from 9 till 10 a.m. on cliffcentral.com. We literally like chat to the exact people that Leslie Ann is speaking of, the people that are on the ground using the little that they've got to help their little community who will never get any recognition, any funding, any anything from government. These are the people that we speak to directly who are giving off themselves. So yes, don't miss that this Thursday from 9 to 10.
Very good. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Have a good day. Cheers, everybody. CliffCentral.com.